Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. My name is Taylor, and I am doing a solo episode today. Kelly, unfortunately, is not able to join us for some personal reasons, but our thoughts are with Kelly. And we hope that he will be back very soon. But in the meantime, I am recording this. It is WrestleMania Sunday, and we have a WrestleMania weekend to talk about. But before we do, gotta get in the plugs. Follow us on Blue Sky at JBomb Audio. You can follow Kelly at Comic Geek Kelly. You can follow me at TameAimbo. Subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice. And if that app of choice is Apple Podcasts, we would really appreciate a 5-star rating and review. And if you're feeling extra generous, you can donate to the show at redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. And I'm happy to say that this episode of Jumping Bomb Audio is brought to you by the Topps Company. Explore the storied world of Topps, the definitive destination for premium trading cards and rare collectibles since 1938. From iconic rookie cards and high-end sports memorabilia to exclusive limited edition entertainment releases, Topps provides collectors with the gold standard in quality and authenticity. Topps is the leader in sports and entertainment trading cards, collectibles, and memorabilia. Shop the latest MLB, NBA, NHL, and MLS cards today at voicesofwrestling.com/JBATOPS. That's voicesofwrestling.com/JBATOPPS. All right, so let's get into it. As I mentioned, recording this on WrestleMania weekend Sunday, most of the action has concluded, although I do have Lucha Libre Day 2 up on my TV as I record this. Lucha Libre, the two shows taking place at the Las Vegas Library, two free shows. So that is probably the last show that I will see this weekend until some other things start getting released, which is one of the big things we will talk about. But let's go through the weekend as it was, the extended weekend, I should say, because it started all the way back on April 15th with Pandemonium Pro Wrestling's Whatever Forever happening at the Bazaar Bar. The Bazaar Bar lived up to its name in terms of the Wi-Fi connection. Some shows did air from the Bazaar Bar. Some shows did not air from the Bazaar Bar. This was one that did not air. There were two Joshi-related matches there. Amira, Jinai Kai, and Saeeda in a three-way match for the Pandemonium Pro Championship. And also Johnny Robbie versus Natsupoi. That match hasn't come out yet. Spoke with some people who were in the building who put it in their top five, top 10 matches of the weekend. So a very strong showing. Johnny Robbie having a very strong showing overall. But supposedly a very good match. I believe this show is going to maybe come out at some point in the following week. So something to keep an eye on there. Thursday, the 16th, started off early, 11 a.m. West Coast time at the Pearl Theater. It was Tokyo Joshi's TJPW Live in Las Vegas 2026. This was probably the big Joshi show, along with the Stardom show, both happening at the Pearl Theater. And I'll start by giving my general thoughts really on both of those shows, which was that they were both very solid, good shows, enjoyable shows, but I would say neither probably crossed into the territory of must-see, great shows, you know, killer shows. I think, in my opinion, the Tokyo Joshi show was a little bit stronger, just because it had some meaning to it. It had multiple title matches. I think between the two shows, it had probably two of the stronger matches between Tokyo Joshi and Stardom. But I'll say this, I started watching stuff on Wednesday night. And as I just talked about, I'm still watching things. I've watched something like 25 shows. It's a lot of shows. The Tokyo Joshi and Stardom shows, as I said, were fine compared to a lot of the other shows I watched. These two shows could have been Big Egg. They could have been among the greats of all time. You know, when you're watching things, just having entrance videos, having things move, you know, the show started on time. The show ran through. It had a professional announcer. The lights worked. The microphones worked. You know, the bar, I think, for WrestleMania, and there's been a lot of discussion about this for many parties, people who were there, people who were not there, like I was, people streaming at home. You know, the bar has lowered. And as I said, I enjoyed this Tokyo Joshi show. If the whole weekend would have been blowaway shows, you would have thought, okay, it's fine. You probably don't think about this Tokyo Joshi show after a couple of days. But just comparatively, it's like night and day. So I have to at least applaud Tokyo Joshi for getting away from the collective. You know, it's possible the attendance for this for the Tokyo Joshi show was something like 424 was the announced attendance. And I believe there were people there who were saying 424 may have been very generous of a count. But they were in a huge, that Pearl Theater is very big. And so it looked very sparse. But getting Tokyo Joshi away from the collective with the late shows, the non-working mics, the just general unprofessional atmosphere, I think is a net positive, because just looking at the show, it came off as one of the most professional shows of the entire weekend, which I think there's something to be said about that. And like I said, I enjoyed the show. We can go through the matches. Some of these, not much thoughts. Very much sort of house show style. You know, get the people out there, let them do some stuff, and then let's move on. The first match, Ober Eats, Wakano Uehara, and Yuki Kamifuku defeating Toga and Uta Takami in 10 minutes and 3 seconds. Yuki hitting a great-looking dropkick on Uta at one point. That really the standout of the match. Also that Wakano posted about going to eat the heart attack burger in Vegas, which I think is something like 10 burger patties and buns or something. And I can't imagine doing anything for the rest of my life if I ate 10 burgers in one sitting. Next match, six-person tag match. Palm Harajuku, Rocco, and Yuki Aino defeated Alexis Lee, Himawari, and Shino Suzuki in 14 minutes and 36 seconds. Those were really the two matches, undercard matches. Get people on the show, of course. Palm Harajuku always over with the crowd. And I will say, the crowd, the 424, whatever number they actually were into all the matches. You know, they were loud, so it didn't much bother me that there weren't many people there, except sometimes you would look out and think, oh, it doesn't look great. But the people were into the show, so that's really probably more important than a lot of people there who aren't into the show. Next match was that the typical sort of American showcase match that Tokyo Joshi usually puts on these cards. It was a three-way match, Miyu Yamashita defeating Miyu Watanabe and Mizuki in 14 minutes and 5 seconds. Like this match, wasn't my favorite match on the show, although it's currently the highest-rated cage match match on this show. I thought it was a definitive sort of step below some of the bigger or more notable singles matches that they've done on some previous American shows in Tokyo Joshi, but thought it was very good. I think at the end of the day, I went 3 3/4. So a fun match, maybe not one that is going to stick with you forever, but three good workers, worked well, got through it. So definitely enjoyable. Just, I think, slightly below what I expected based on some of the previous matches they had had, especially when they stick these, hey, here's our good wrestlers, they're going to go out and have a good match type thing. Didn't quite get there for me. The next match was our first of three title matches. It was for the International Princess title match. Suzume, the champion, retaining against Sakura Hattori in 11 minutes and 36 seconds. This actually was my favorite match on the show. I went 4 stars. I thought it was really good. I think Hattori is rounding into this character, into the in-ring work, has definitely improved, you know, still has some of those issues that I've talked about. I think some of these are going to end up being personal hang-ups for me. You know, the thing on the top rope with the the hands and the poses and the noises, you know, I'm still not, I still don't understand it. I'm not really into it, but it seems like that's the centerpiece, one of the centerpiece offensive moves that they've decided on for her. So at this point, I think it is what it is. But Hattori's offense looked great. At near the end of the match, he hit a very Miyu Yamashita-like kick on Suzume, which looked really good. I thought this was very well worked. Obviously, Suzume, very good. You know, I don't think the result was really ever in doubt. I was wondering if maybe they would do something crazy and put the belt on Hattori just to do something interesting. But Suzume winning, not really a surprise. And definitely a solid match. This was my match of the show. I thought this was the best one. But I had some people who reached out, asked me, hey, what should I watch on the Tokyo Joshi show? And I just told them, I think the three-way and the International Princess title back-to-back, you're talking about 26 minutes of, you know, less than 26 minutes of in-ring time, can get through it quickly. So definitely what I would recommend from this show. The semi-main event was for the Princess tag team titles. The Inspiration Cassie Lee and Jesse McKay winning, defeating Hyper Masao and Shoko Nakajima in just under 13 minutes. A little bit of a surprising result. I think the general thought was that the Inspiration won them to then get booked in Vegas and lose them, but I guess they will be making at least one more appearance as they won. You know, the reaction I saw online when people were watching this live was obviously some unhappiness. Look, I said it in their last match. Are these great, super work rate matches? No. Are they wowing me in ring? Not at all. But I have to say, I'm enjoying having these heels here. You know, Tokyo Joshi doesn't do heels really. You know, since Neobashiki-gun went away, they don't have this type of thing. And I'm enjoying it from a sort of simplistic wrestling 101 style place. You know. And as I said last time, look, if the Inspiration had beaten Daisy Monkey and ended their reign, and they had beaten someone here, some great, you know, the Sugar Rabbits, you know, if Yuka showed up and Yuka and Mizuki wrestled the Inspiration and lost, the Magical Sugar Rabbits, I would probably be like, oh, now hold on a minute here. But it's not, you know, they wrestled Ober Eats. If Ober Eats had won the title and it was Ober Eats against Masao and Nakajima at the show, I'm not sure the match would be any better. You know, we're not moving on from some all-time great, you know, tag team here to put the belts on the Inspiration. And look, getting ahead a little bit, you know, this show not happening in the next 2 weeks, but they have Yes Wonderland coming up. The Inspiration are defending against Daydream. Miyu and Rika. If they beat Miyu and Rika, I think I may start to have an issue. You know, that's a different story. Hyper Masao and Shoko Nakajima, okay, you know, not great, but whatever. Maybe they booked one more date. They're like, yeah, we like working Tokyo Joshi and we'll come back at, you know, in 2 weeks on May 4th and we'll drop the belts in Korakuen Hall. That's fine. I enjoyed the match for what it was. Again, it would probably be like 3.25. But it was fine. I liked the heel work. And it doesn't bother me. It's something different. You know, heels in a promotion that doesn't usually have heels. And, you know, it's fine. But again, I have the right to change my mind based on, you know, future wins and losses. And then the main event of this show was Yuki Arai, the champion, defeating J-Rod in 11 minutes and 18 seconds, successfully retaining the Princess of Princess title. This match, it was fine. I was not, in any sense of the word, blown away. But I was also not thinking, oh, this is, you know, incompetent. This is bad. It was what it was. J-Rod, I think, is fine. I think, you know, was elevated in the match with Miyu by, of course, Miyu. And I think Yuki is, you know, more and more we've talked about on the show a lot. Hey, here's what she needs to do. She needs to get better here. And I think a lot of those flaws got covered up by the build to the Miyu match. You know, we thought, oh, maybe this is it. This is the moment that, you know, she can take that next step. And part of me thinks that next, you know, there is no next step. It's a little bit like the other Yuki, one of the other Yukis, you know, Yuki Kamifuku. That was a thing. She won the International Princess title. And there was, at least I thought, oh, maybe this is the moment that she takes that next step and she becomes, you know, solid, great in-ring worker, and it didn't happen. And it just, it is what it is. You know, I think Yuki Arai is a fine wrestler. I don't think she's ever going to be on that level of, you know, from an in-ring perspective, of a Shoko, of a Miyu, of a Mizuki, the other Miyu, Yamashita. You know, it just isn't happening. You know, she does the finally never really looks great, but she keeps doing it, you know, because someone thinks it's good enough. You know, interested to see. I don't think this is any part of it, but 424 drawn to this show, Yuki Arai on top, you know, defending against J-Rod. Look, she was announced like 2 weeks ago because she hadn't won the title. So I don't really count this, but it's not a great start that, you know, this company goes to Texas, Miyu's the champion, they're doing all these things. They're drawing, you know, in four shows, they draw 4,000 people. Yuki wins the title, and, you know, we'll talk about this in a second, but a few hundred people in Vancouver, and now a few hundred people in Vegas, you know. Probably not a fair assessment. We have to look. We'll have to see what happens with Yes Wonderland. We'll have to see what happens with other things. But she is now the face of the company. And not drawing all that great. Again, I'll sort of wipe these out. And it's possible maybe Yes Wonderland, they sell out Corican Hall. And then the story is different. But, you know, everything can be a piece of the puzzle, even if the piece is very small. You know, this may be 1/100th of the story of Yuki Arai in terms of what she's doing, how she's drawing, but 1/100th is 1/100th. So we will see. So, you know, again, a solid show. Two matches I enjoy. Two matches I would say go back, watch the three-way, watch the International Princess title match. But I think it was lower overall in quality, below at least, I would probably say, two of the Texas shows that they recently did, and below probably the previous two Texas shows they did, which I remember being very strong. So good, not great, but again, after watching so much that was, I would say, fair to poor to horrible, certainly came off better. It was early enough in the week that I didn't really know how low it would get, but can look sort of back fondly and say, oh, a show that just ran and was competent, and thank God for that. Then at 7 p.m. local time, back at the Bazaar Bar, was West Coast Pro Wrestling, West Coast versus the World. This one didn't air. They announced, I believe, a week before the show that it was not airing. It should be coming out. I believe the announcement was the 22nd or 23rd of April, so that will be coming out. I think this one going to be probably one of the very few shows to seek out and watch when it comes out. A number of Joshi-related matches. Aja Kong versus Miko Alana. Johnny Robbie versus Mio Momono. And then the big match, possibly the match of all of WrestleMania weekend. The original match, Senka against Danny Luna. Danny Luna, unfortunately, not able to make it due to the death of her father. It was announced as Senka versus an ex. There was some thought it could be Chigusa. Obviously, she was there. You know, it was announced as a 5-minute exhibition match, I should say. So there was some leeway. It could be Chigusa. You know, Megumi Kudo was there. I guess people thought, oh, maybe, you know, thinking, okay, who would do a 5-minute exhibition as opposed to just do a match? But it turned out to be the returning Chris Hero going up against Senka. This is a match, Chris Hero against Senka. Had they announced this before, and obviously it only happened because of the change of plans with Danny Luna, so obviously was not going to be announced before. Had they announced it before, this is a match I would have considered flying out for. Because to me, I mean, Chris Hero, obviously, I think we can say retired at this point, wrestled in at West Coast, what was that, 3 years ago, however long ago that was. Coming back here for a five-minute exhibition. I mean, Chris Hero, from a time in my wrestling life, you know, that Ring of Honor 2005 to 2008 period, which is possibly one of my, I mean, I wouldn't say possibly, is my favorite wrestling period of all time. You know, every X that ever gets announced, I think, oh, it could be Chris Hero, especially in AEW where he works. But now seems more and more unlikely. And then to add on to that, they did this 5 minute exhibition match, and pretty much everyone I know who was there has put it at the top of their match of the weekend list. I was seeing 4.5. I was seeing people say things like, I haven't felt this way watching a wrestling match in years. You know, this brought me back to that Ring of Honor period where you would go to those shows and those shows were so hot and you were into the shows and it was so great. So devastated that this didn't stream. I did see, I believe, people recorded some clips online. You can see some of those very brief, you know, 20-second clips, 30-second clips, which look great. And I can't wait to watch the match, of course. You know, I don't know if it will get to that height, just because obviously you know the match is coming. Obviously no one in the world knew that it was going to be Hero. And of course, being there live, in the moment, in the WrestleMania weekend time, very different than sitting at home watching it 4 days later after all the WrestleMania thoughts have worn out of your brain. But still looking forward to see that, just because it's a match for me personally. That is very exciting. Senka, I think, and we'll talk about this momentarily with the next show at the Bizarre Bar, but Senka again, I think for the second weekend in a row, really sticking out, having another big weekend, and is obviously someone destined to do something big because she's got it. And the fact that, you know, Hero does this, the fact that we'll talk about later in the Aja Kong match, she had Aja Kong taking the pin, taking a pin for the first time in, I believe, 7 years. You know, this is something clearly happening. Then at 8 p.m. at the Horseshoe, as part of the Collected, it was El Desperado Presents Death Vegas Invitational. There was a couple of Joshi-related matches. The first one was the Deadly Airtime and Cutie Crime High Stakes Heartbreak Jackpot match. Dragon Kid and Starlight Kid teaming against El Fantasmo and Micah, who was subbing in for Maki Ito, who unfortunately could not make the show because of visa issues. Was very happy to see Micah. They did an odd thing in this match, and I'm not sure if it was done purposely for comedy or if they just didn't really want to think too hard, which is that Micah just came in and did Maki Ito spots. You know, El Fantasmo and Micah climbing up the turnbuckles to deliver the punches and saying, "We're the cutest tag team in the world." That was the first one. I thought, oh, maybe El Fantasmo doesn't really have much else to say. But then Micah in the middle of the match doing or attempting multiple Kokeshis, so it was very clear that they had some path to this doing this match that needed to keep those in. So a little bit interesting to see Micah, you know, doing the Maki Ito spots. I thought this match was good. Not great. I would say nothing to go out of your way for, possibly a bit too long. Feels very much like the, I'm trying to think of what the match was a couple of months ago with Shima and Starlight Kid and all of them. Very similar vibes. Felt more like a, hey, aren't we glad to sort of be here and be hanging out and doing this rather than, hey, we're trying to put on a great in-ring match. And then the main event of the show was the three-way death match. Nick Gage and Matt Tremont, El Desperado and Jun Kasai, Masashi Takeda and Rina Yamashita. Nick Gage pinning El Desperado, so Rina not involved in the finish. For me, someone who likes death matches, I enjoy them. I thought this was very good. I went 4.5 stars. This might be my match of the weekend. I think if you've seen a lot of death matches, I'm not sure that there's anything here that's going to not change your mind, but blow you away or make you think, oh, I've never seen that before. It very much was sort of, hey, let's do some highlight. It was sort of was like a best of death matches, did some fun highlights, did some fun moves, really no story other than, you know, violence. But I thought it was super fun. I thought it really worked. Again, I'm someone who likes death matches. If you don't like death matches, you're not going to like this one, I would say. I think pretty easy to say. But if you're into death matches, if you like any of these people, I would definitely recommend it. As I mentioned, Marvelous then was at the Bizarre Bar at 10:30 p.m. after West Coast Pro. This also didn't air, but had a lot of Joshi action on it. Had the Spark Rush tag. Mio Momono and Johnny Robbie against Spark Rush. Seri managing to make it from Fortune Dream to the USA in time to do this match. So that was good. The big news of this show, and again, didn't air, so I haven't seen all of it. Maybe there's something I haven't heard about. Senka pinning Aja Kong. As I said, I believe the first time in 7 years that Aja Kong has taken a pin. Saw a clip of it. Senka got her on a roll-up. So a big win, a follow-up to last year's sort of surprise match of the weekend, or one of the surprise matches of the weekend. So again, haven't seen it. One of those, I think, also looking forward to seeing that. I believe this one is going up on Wrestle Universe at some point because Marvelous is there. Marvelous looking like they're at least going to have a little bit more stuff there because they will also be putting their 10th anniversary show on Wrestle Universe as a pay-per-view. But that is for another episode. Game Changer Wrestling had a show at 11:59 p.m. at the Horseshoe Las Vegas. It was MDK Fight Club, Megumi Kudo. We talked about her last episode, didn't know what she was going to do. She was scheduled to appear. She got inducted into the Deathmatch Hall of Fame, so not working a match, but did appear at the show, got a plaque, etc., etc. The one Joshi match on this show, Viperess versus Rina Yamashita versus Charlie Evans, a total nothing match, not worth your time. And that's all there is to say about that one. We move on to Friday, Stardom American Dream 2026 in Las Vegas at the Pearl Theater, 3 p.m. on Friday. As I mentioned, I thought this was a solid Stardom show. I think if you were to skip the whole show, you wouldn't really miss much. Although I think there was some pretty solid slash good action on it. Going through it, the first match, the Cosmic Angels, Aya Sakura and Natsupoi defeating Brittany Brooks and Saki. Then a six-person tag, Hanako, Micah, and Mina Shirakawa defeating Hazuki, Rina Yamashita, and Suzu Suzuki. Then we got to what I would call the business end of the card. Athena defeating Rena in 13 minutes and 7 seconds. I think this probably was my favorite match of the show. Very well worked. Athena looked good, as she usually does. Rena looked solid. Rena getting some minor injury because she was supposed to be on the Spark Joshi show that's taking place today and was announced as having a minor injury and so was pulled from the show. So something happened there, but a fun match. Nothing life-changing. I probably would have gone 3 3/4 on it. Next, the one title match of the show, Alex Windsor defending her New Japan Strong Women's title against Saya Iida. A solid match, I think probably more exciting for people who haven't seen Iida. I know Sean Sidor from Voices of Wrestling watched this match, hadn't seen Iida before, and was like, hey, she's great. Which, yes, I've been saying that for a while, so nothing too surprising here. Nothing crazy, but again, solidly worked. And same with the main 6-person tag, the Neo Genesis trio of Izumi, Mei Sierra, and Starlight Kid, defeating the AEW trio, Harley Cameron, Willow Nightingale, and Chris Statlander. Quick show. Longest match was the main event, which only went 12 and a half minutes. I believe the whole, because I watched it on demand. The video file is an hour and 50 minutes long, and I think 15 minutes of that is an intermission. So, a very quick show. You know, I think if you were going looking for a true Stardom experience, you probably left disappointed. But all the work was solid. We'll say the one thing that made me laugh was they opened the show. You know, they had a big video screen, or they have a big video screen at the Pearl Theater, where they put up the video running down the card. They ran down the whole card, and it was the original card back when there were some people who were coming who obviously Maki and Yurihime got blocked for visa issues. So they played this whole card, and then the announcer immediately had to come on the microphone and say, just letting you know that isn't the card, and the card will be changing. So a bit odd. I'm sure they probably flew, you know, found out very late, couldn't change the video, but seems odd to not just have someone stand in the ring and say, you know, just play the start of music and have someone say the new card. Because to show a different card and then say, hey, actually, this isn't the card, just a bit odd. Again, this Stardom show, if you missed it, you missed it. It was on the Palm Slam Fest package, so it was an extra cost. It isn't included on the Triller TV Plus subscription. So I think it was something like, I think it's like $20. I don't know. I paid for the combo pack, which was, you know, Tokyo Joshi and Stardom and CMLL and House of Glory and Maple Leaf Pro. And I think that whole thing was $55 or something. So, you know, I would say probably not worth the monetary investment, but if you want to see it, you know, I don't think you'll leave thinking it was a terrible show. Then it was Game Changer Wrestling's Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 15 at the Horseshoe Las Vegas at 3 p.m. This concept, which really I've hated since it started, I hate this fake, you know, same thing with the Stardom matches that were always called UWF rules, and then it's just sort of a wrestling match where they wrestle slightly different. Have always sort of found this style sort of fake. The one Joshi match on the show was Miyu Yamashita versus Jinai Kai. Miyu Yamashita winning, getting her first Bloodsport victory. Of course, Josh Barnett at the end of the show announcing that the Bloodsport concept is going to be retired, at least for a time. So maybe Miyu's first and last victory here. Beating Jinai Kai, I thought this was fine. Nearly turned into a disaster at the end of the match. Jinai, I couldn't even really tell what was happening. Jinai went for a kick that looked bad or missed or was botched, and then Miyu went for a kick that also, like, they mistimed everything. And so they were just sort of randomly kicking each other, and I couldn't tell whether the kicks were supposed to be missing or whether they were just in the wrong position or what was going on, because the whole thing just seemed a mess. And then Miyu hit a head kick, knocked Jinai Kai out. Jinai Kai actually did a good job, went into fencing position with the head kick. So the very finish was good, but a match I also would probably say you can safely skip. And then there were two Pride-style pro wrestling shows, one at 6 p.m. on Friday, one at 7 p.m. on Saturday. The Friday one had Taniya versus Miyu Watanabe. The Saturday one having Amira versus Senka. Neither aired. They were outdoor shows, I believe. I saw some pictures from them, but neither of them have aired. Supposedly, I've heard that Pride Style puts their shows up a month after they happen. If that's the case, I'll probably never watch these matches, but maybe they can go up a little bit sooner because they're WrestleMania. And then the Sunday show, Spark Joshi, Lady Luck 2. When I started this recording, hadn't aired yet, I believe. Now, at this point, it is airing, but haven't seen it. I know that it is on Triller, but it is its own separate $20 purchase, not related to Triller TV Plus, not obviously included in the Palms wrestling package. So buy it sort of at your own decision. So that is WrestleMania weekend, a very strange WrestleMania weekend, but actually I think, oddly enough, the Joshi workers, the Joshi companies, of all the companies possibly, came out looking the best. They ran professional shows. Would have been great if one of the shows, if the Stardom show, if the Tokyo Joshi show, could have had a really blow-away match. I think that would have really been the cherry on top, would have gotten more eyes on those promotions on a weekend when a lot of people were running poor shows, to get people's eyes on those shows where everything is done very competently, and to also on top of that have a great match would have been great. But solid action, and we will have to see that West Coast show, that Marvelous show, two of the highlights of the weekend. So we'll have to see when those come out what those look like, because those may just help the Joshi case. So the Joshi workers, the Joshi company, sort of avoiding the controversy of the rest of the weekend. What has been happening back in Japan, as many people have been in America? Well, Stardom, before that, on the 8th at their Korakuen Hall show, and on the 11th, finished up their Rookie of Stardom 2026 tournament. Emma Mashima and Kyoko Furusawa advancing to the finals on that Korakuen Hall show on April 8th, defeating Yura Hime and Akira Kuragana. And on the 11th of April, the finals, Emma Mashima defeating Kyoko Furusawa to win the Rookie of Stardom 2026. Seedling had a Korakuen Hall show on April 17th. Two title matches, Beyond the Sea tag team title, Honori Hana and Unagi Saika retaining against Celine Mizora and Veni. And then in the main event, it was the conclusion of their singles tournament and also a Beyond the Sea title match. Ayame Sasamura defeating Hiroyo Matsumoto to win that Beyond the Sea title. This match I very much enjoyed. I went 4 stars. Not super work, but I thought very solid, very good. Very happy to see Ayame Sasamura win the title. I think especially for a company like Seedling that sort of feels a little bit like they're just stuck on the bottom. Try something new, put the title on Ayame, see what happens, I think is certainly worthy. I thought the finishing stretch, the final few minutes of this match were very strong. Very exciting, back and forth, some close pins. You know, Seedling did not draw well at Korakuen Hall. They drew 425 fans, but those fans were loud. They were good fans. They were this main event. They were making noise. They were into it. They were having a good time. you know, definitely helped the match. So even though it was not very many people, it was, I would say, probably 95% of the people were in the orange seats. They had one row of chairs on the floor. So clearly not super well attended, but I thought they really picked up this match, made it, you know, improved it, and I thought the work was very good. So definitely worth checking out. In Tokyo Joshi on the 8th of April, they had an international princess title number one contendership five-way match. Haru Kazushiro winning that, so she will challenge Suzume on Yes Wonderland as one of the three title matches there. And then Tokyo Joshi running the two Vancouver shows on April 11th and April 12th. Those shows, I think the first show drew 400, the second show drew 3-something. So 700 combined, not blow-away numbers, not blow-away shows. So might be the moment to maybe take a step back now that they've run Vegas, they've run Texas, they've run Vancouver. Let the demand build up a little bit and then come back. You know, what happens next year with Mania? Who's to say? In all aspects, maybe there's another opportunity to piggyback off an AEW event. We will have to see. Sendai Girls also had a show at Corican Hall on April 12th. Some big matches here. FWC defeated Red Energy in a tag team match, 13 minutes, 43 seconds. Senka defeated Spike Nishimura in a Sendai Girls Junior title match. A hardcore match, Dash Chisako defeated Kurishio Tokyo Japan, 19 minutes and 15 seconds. Look, I thought this was solid. I think the Dash matches at this point for me are sort of diminishing returns. Feels to me like these hardcore matches are all the same. You know the spots that they involve. They're going to involve a ladder. They're going to involve Dash jumping off the ladder, doing that frog splash onto chairs. I mean, she had a very high ladder. She came down very fast and very hard onto Kurishio Tokyo Japan. That obviously the spot of the match, then climbed back up the ladder to deliver the frog splash on some chairs to win the match. You know, I think a solid 3.5, but I think these matches increasingly are having a cap on them for me, just because there's only so many times I can see the same 6 or 7 moves in the match before I think, oh, I've seen this before, and I'm good for now. The semi-main was a singles match, Shuri defeating Chihiro Hashimoto by referee decision. It was due to a choke, Shuri choking out Hashimoto. Thought this was very good. I think I'm a little bit below consensus. I went 4 stars. Thought this was really solid. I think my favorite part of it was the finish. Shuri kind of pulling Hashimoto into that choke. You know, so many of these matches, you know, we see someone, there's got to be 2 or 3 submissions where the person crawls to the rope and then they get them on the third. This one, Shuri just sort of got her. She was in the choke. She went out. The referee called it, and that was it. And I thought that was a great finish. Just a sudden finish really put over Shuri's ability to sort of end the match at any time. So again, I really enjoyed it. I went 4 stars. I think some people were higher, maybe 4.25 or 4.5, but definitely worth checking out. And then the main event, Manami and Ryo Mizunami winning the Sendai Girls tag team titles, defeating Bob Bob Momo Banana. This match was fine. Nothing crazy. I think some of these Bob Bob Momo Banana matches, I go in with too high expectations, and then they're just sort of solid matches. So I think part of that's on me. Nothing terrible, but I would say nothing you really need to see. And then the other big news of the last 2 weeks in Diana, Haruka Umasaki winning the Diana World title there, defeating Debbie Keitel. So what is coming up in the next 2 weeks? Well, Stardom has a Corican Hall show on April 23rd. That will have Saki Kashima's last match. It will be Saki Kashima and Shuri teaming against Azumi and Momo Watanabe. Then on the 26th of April, is All-Star Grand Queendom, the big Stardom show. This event will feature Saki Kashima's retirement ceremony, so no match, at least that's announced, but we'll have that ceremony. The card is as follows. It will be Natsupoi against Maki Ito in a singles match, Sayori Ano against Fuwa-chan, and if Fuwa-chan loses, she must drop her namesake moniker and wrestle under her real name. Certainly seems like a stipulation you make if you want to change someone's name to something else, maybe a more wrestling type name. So I would think that Sayori likely to win that one. Suzu Suzuki and Rin Yamashita will take on Micah and Hanako in a hardcore tag team match. And then we have all the titles. Rani Yagami will defend the Future of Stardom title against Emma Mashima. Natsuko Tora and Ruaka will defend the Goddesses of Stardom titles against Azumi and Miyu Amasaki. Suri will defend the IWGP Women's title against Megan Bain. Konami will defend the Wonder of Stardom title against Hanan. And Saya Kamatani will defend the World of Stardom title against Sayaka Karara. If Karara loses, Cosmic Angels will disband. An interesting looking card. I would say certainly, at least in my mind, not really on the level of some of the previous Grand Queendoms that they've done. Some interesting things. Konami versus Hanan could be interesting. The main event, obviously, probably the biggest draw. You know, a hardcore match. So some, I would say it's more interesting to me than exciting. I think there's been some matches previously on these shows that have, I've been like, oh, this is going to be really good. I cannot wait to see that. I don't know that there's really, outside the main event, really that big match. I mean, the hardcore match really could go a lot of different ways. Stardom, not exactly a hardcore focused promotion. You know, Fuwa-chan has been very good, so interested to see that Sayori Ano match. But Suri Megan Bain doesn't really do it for me. I think Megan Bain just sort of is what she is, and it's not very interesting to me. Obviously, you know I'm not going to be interested in watching Natsuko Tora and Ruaka putz around the ring in the tag title match, although I'm certainly hopeful that Azumi and Miyu Amasaki can win those titles and maybe get those titles back on the right track. But an interesting show. Be interested to see what happens. Be interested to see what they draw. You know, very possible that Kamatani is the super draw and it doesn't really matter what's underneath her. But we will see. Also on the 26th, Oz has a show at Corican Hall. That will have a, well, it's technically a four-way for the Oz title. It will be Hiroyo Matsumoto, Akino, Mayumi Ozaki, and Momoka Hanazono. What will happen is they will do a lottery to make two tag teams, and then the winning tag team will face off against each other for the title. And then the other title match on that show is the Pioneer three-way title. Ryu Mizunami, Rin Yamashita, and Rin will face off for that. Marigold has a very big Corican Hall show the day before on the 25th. There will be a Lady AI singles match. Victoria Yuzuki will face off against Maddie Morgan. Koke Amore will face off in a singles match against Chika Goto. They did a press conference with a lot of tears over that one. Angel Hayes will defend the BEW women's title against Sari Yamaoka. I'm not even sure what BEW is. I believe it may be British Empire Wrestling. A company I've never heard of, and I believe it is now looking at Cage Match, as Angel Hayes is the champion there. A company I've never heard of, not sure what is going to go into this match, but we will see. And then an interesting main event, Miko Aono will defend against Utami, will defend the Marigold title. Certainly seems quick to go back to Utami here. I don't really understand this or what they're doing. I think going back to Utami at this point would sort of feel, at least to me, you know, it's been a bit, but would sort of feel to me a bit like sort of pull in case of emergency type booking. Certainly wouldn't make me feel good about the prospects of Miko, who I think, as we've talked about, is one of the better young wrestlers that they've brought up in this company, where they haven't brought up very many good wrestlers. So a bit odd there. And then the big tournament is starting. That's right. It's Catch the Wave 2026. Will start on May 3rd. So the way it works this year, of course, slightly different every year. Three main blocks and two secondary blocks. Main blocks are Swell, Breaker, and Surge. The Swell block will be Saki, Natsu Samire, Kaho Kobayashi, Mika Ozaki, Itsuki Aoki, and Kakeru Sakaguchi. Breaker will be Kohaku, Momoka Hanazono, Rina Amakura, Yuko Sakurai, Haruka Umasaki, and Mirai. And Surge will be Saran, Hanako, Yuri, Arisa Shinose, Zones, and Rion. Then the secondary blocks will be the Young Block and the Elizabeth Block. The Young Block, Miria Koga, Miku Kanai, Saito, Great Shiono, Konami Hori, and Anna. And the Elizabeth Block will be Yumi Oka, Kiori Yoniyama, Cherry, Miyako Matsumoto, and Mochi Nadzumi. The tournament rules, I believe, are all the round-robin matches are 10 minutes, one fall. Wins are worth 3 points. Losses are zero. Time limit draw. For time limit draws, the older wrestler of the two gets 1 point, and the younger wrestler of the two gets 2 points, which I think is interesting. Double countouts are zero, and the ring outs are only 10 instead of 20. After all the round robin matches are finished, it will be the three block winners and the five other wrestlers with the highest number of points will go into a single elimination tournament, the winner of which will win the tournament, win a cash prize, and a Regina DeWave title shot. The Young Block, they will wrestle each other. The winner of that block will get a Princess of Pro Wrestling title shot. And the Elizabeth Block rules are three-way matches, and the winner will get an Elizabeth title shot. Now, that may all sound very exciting to you. It sounds exciting to me. There's some interesting names in there. You know, would be happy to see Mika Ozaki, Mirai, Haruka Umasaki. Interested in some Miku Kanai matches. Well, I think I've got some bad news for you, which is that, remember Catch the Wave 2025? Well, those matches have just started being uploaded to the Wave YouTube channel. That's right. 2 weeks ago, they uploaded the first match. They still have only uploaded matches from the first show of Catch the Wave 2025, which took place on May 4, 2025. They uploaded Yumi Oka versus Unagi Sayaka 10 hours ago. So the likelihood of being able to see this interesting tournament is very low. But maybe one day you'll be able to see it. Maybe I'll go back now and watch the 2025 Catch the Wave tournament. Always a bummer, because back when they had the, you know, the Wave Network and things like that, you could very easily see the shows, and they were often pretty dependable for some pretty good matches, pretty exciting matches. So a little bit of a bummer to not be able to see those matches until a very long time from now. But that's the Wave way. And that is everything coming up in the next 2 weeks of Joshi. Before we leave, of course, remember this episode of the show sponsored by the Topps Company. So you can shop all their latest cards at voicesofwrestling.com/JBA Topps, voicesofwrestling.com/JBA Topps. And I just want to end the episode We usually have a Kelly's Corner here. Kelly obviously not here today, so I just want to let him know that he's missed on the show. We can't wait to have him back, and hope everything is okay with him. But that is all for this week's episode of Jumping Bomb Audio. But Jumping Bomb Audio will be back again in 2 weeks' time for even more Joshi action. So until then, stay cool.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.